a very good Monday morning to you. We celebrate Veterans Day today. So if you are off work, that would be unlike my current situation. Hope you're enjoying this important day in our history, 11-12-18. Veterans Day officially on the 11th, which was yesterday. Kind of like the ring to that number, 11-11-18. But since it's Sunday, we continue the celebrating today on this rather wintry Monday in the great Buckeye State. If you don't already know, the person emanating from your radio or smartphone or other gadget speaker is I, Adam Lepp, the computer guy, webmaster, producer and voicer of obituaries, and a bunch of other things that I do here at the station. But one of the most enjoyable educational things is hosting this program that we're going to start right now, and it's called A Finer Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam and the Professor. And if you're a regular listener to WWGH, we not only thank you from the bottom of our hearts for that, but you probably know that the professor is the official WWGH presidentologist, Dr. Ron L. Feynman, curator of obscure, interesting, and important and brain-stimulating presidential information, political commentator of sorts. He leans to the left, but again, he's not an extreme left person like someone I often like to malign. That, of course, would be Mr. Sanders. He's more like the person who is not going to be governor of the United States of Ohio. Again, Richard Cordray, also a fan of Mr. Joe Biden and other Democrats that we talk about regularly. Not other than Dr. Ron Feynman. He is the professor, and let's see if I properly patched the cables. I gave the intern the day off today, so I do this all by myself, and let's see if I'm not too rusty. If I properly duct taped, sometimes super glued, and patched the proper cables. Ron, are you there?
I am here. It's Monday morning, and it's a Veterans Day celebration, and yesterday, Sunday, was actually the centennial of the end of World War I, November 11th, 1918.
Now, our beloved President Donald was going to go to a celebration on Saturday, but apparently Mother Nature got a little bit on the wet side, and he couldn't make it. And, of course, there have been a lot of memes about that, including one that I sent you yesterday. What's your general opinion, Ron? Do you think that rain should keep the president from attending an event celebrating the men and women who've sacrificed for our country? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely not. The president is supposed to be a ceremonial leader for good and bad events, and he's supposed to be there, and there's not supposed to be anything to stop him. And the French president and the Canadian prime minister and the British prime minister were there. And, of course, our president sent Kelly and others, you know, to go to this event, so they had to get wet. And it's just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, and he's been really been blasted about it since Saturday and even yesterday, Sunday, with his criticism of the French president and the idea, you know, about nationalism that Macron was criticizing as not really something you should be promoting, patriotism, not nationalism. So he's making more enemies with the NATO allies, and, you know, he's just becoming more and more of a threat in many people's minds to world peace.
Well, he's something else, isn't he? And that's why he's often the center of our conversation and often part of a wisecracker, too, that comes from my lips. But that's all part of the fun. Having a Ronversation with Dr. Ron Feynman here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio, about the elections, about Veterans Day, and, of course, other trivia that we managed to take in, including a list of some very, very possible, if not likely, presidential candidates now that the midterm elections are history. Of course, we'll be discussing that next. The 2020 presidential campaign is about ready to commence, and something tells me it will be a one filled with drama, expensive campaign ads, and more than likely a surprise or two, or maybe 200. So let's rewind back to the election of last Tuesday. Now, Ron, both your state, Florida, and my state, Ohio, received surprises in terms of the gubernatorial election. And let's start with your state. Honestly, I'm not quite sure. Are they finished contesting the election? I know you like his name, Ron DeSantis, but don't really like the man. You preferred Andrew Gillum. Gillum, my understanding, might still win, even though he supposedly lost. You're closer to this than I am. What exactly is the current status? Is the election over? Did DeSantis win, or are they still contesting it?
It's still being contested through this next week because of a mess up in Broward County, where I do not live, but Palm Beach County, where I do live. But the whole state is recounting. And at this point, unofficially, Ron DeSantis leads by 33,000, which is probably too much for Andrew Gillum to overcome. But in the Senate race, Governor Scott is running for the Senate. He's only 12,000 or so votes ahead of Bill Nelson. So there's more chance of that working out. But the odds are, according to what I've read, most likely it will not change the result. It might make it closer, but unlikely even with 12,000 or 33,000 to have a switch. But interestingly, the agriculture, the Commissioner of Agriculture, the Democrat, won that and actually had more votes than the Senate race. And it's strange. A lot of people seem not to have voted for senator. There are far fewer votes for senator statewide. And somehow the agriculture commissioner seems to be ahead, although it's not final, and it's a Democrat. And yet everything else seems to be Republican. It's really a split personality kind of a result to make a lot of sense.
Now, you voted for Bill Nelson, if I'm not mistaken. And as I told people last time, get off your rear end and vote. 12,000 people, that isn't even half the population of Marion. That's a small amount, 12,000 people. Your vote does count, and it very well might turn around. But even if it doesn't, sometimes it's literally a fraction of a percentage point. So we really can't stress that enough. That was a very close race. In terms of governor.
Both were, because there's a half a percentage point is enough to have a recount.
Yeah,
and 33,000 is still not even
people.
A half a percent.
That's not even half the number of
people
in Marion. And believe me, it really is important. In terms of the governor's race, as I like to joke around, probably have said this too many times, you don't like Andrew Gillum's name. I didn't mention that before, but there are two presidents named Andrew, both of whom were not considered very good presidents. So again, you don't like his name, but you do like him. You do like Ron DeSantis' name, but you don't like him. So you did vote for Andrew Gillum. I guess that was kind of confusing, but that was part of the fun. As we've discussed before,
I don't vote for people based on their name.
But that is kind of interesting. I forgot to mention that Andrew really is not a very good name for a politician, because both presidents named Andrew really were, I would say, somewhat disastrous. And
Jackson was less disastrous than Johnson. Jackson is usually rated the top half. He slipped a lot in recent times. He used to be in the top 10. He has dropped in the C-SPAN poll from 2009. He was 13th, and now he's 18th. So he's still in the top half. But Andrew Johnson is the bottom. Only Buchanan is lower. Although the American Political Science Association poll in 2018 actually put Johnson higher, because Trump is at the bottom, Buchanan above him, and Andrew Johnson above him. So actually, Andrew Johnson is above two presidents now, both Buchanan and Donald Trump at this point.
Maybe Gillum should go by Andy instead, or maybe he should use his middle name. I'm not quite sure what that is. Or maybe he should reverse his name and go by Gil Andrews. Maybe that would help, because maybe something about maybe something about the name Andrew, because we really talk about the presidents, and with the current ranking and a lot of polls saying Trump is our worst president. I don't make the rankings. I'm just stating what I've read and what Ron has read.
From the APSA poll, yes.
Right. Both excellent. Andrews have come into light, even if people don't know the presidents as well as Ron does, or to an extent as well as I do. So maybe something about that name. We just mentioned Ron DeSantis. I mean, it's a fairly common name, but, don't always vote vote for presidents by their name. But it is kind of an interesting point. So I thought I would bring that up. But you're thinking, Ron, as much as you'd like to think it'll happen, you don't expect Gillum to come out ahead. You still
or Nelson.
DeSantis to win, but by a very small margin.
And Scott. Yeah, I think even Nelson's are going to win. But the thing that gets me is that the state voted by more than 60% to end the loss of voting rights for felons that have met their commitment to society, met all their responsibilities. So they're going to get their right to vote back, which sounds very leftist. And yet they go ahead and they elect the Republican, both cases quite right-wing, not moderate Republican. So it seems like it doesn't make any sense. It makes you wonder if there's been shenanigans going on in the way things were counted, because I don't understand, after that vote on the referendum on the felons getting their rights to vote back, why this would happen. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Politics often doesn't, Ron. That's why we have these long, stimulating discussions. Now, here in Ohio, George Voinovich, as I'm sure you know, Ron, was governor, and then he became a senator.
Yes.
He actually unsuccessfully ran for senator before that against Metzenbaum, but then he became a senator after he became governor, and he was, before that, mayor of a rather Democratic state, and again, Voinovich being a Republican, but a moderate Republican. Right, he was mayor of Cleveland.
Yeah.
Now, and we're seeing Rick Scott probably doing the same thing, and also a Republican. Is that fairly common? You go from being governor to senator, and do you think that happens more if you're a Republican, or am I just looking at a small sample size?
I'm not sure about statistics. I think probably more Republicans, but often if one is governor and is limited by terms, they will often run for the Senate. But if you start off as a senator, assuming you don't get defeated, you most likely would not want to be governor. Honestly, if I had a chance to be either, I'd want to be a senator, because a senator votes, a senator speaks out, may promote bills, but he doesn't have responsibility for a state like a governor does. It's a much tougher job to be a governor. So I think, you know, nobody in their right mind who's a senator would want to be a governor. But if you're a governor and you want to move on, or you have to be moving on because of term limits, then you figure, well, now I'll be a national figure by being in Washington, D.C. as a U.S. senator. So I think it's more likely governors would become senators and senators would become governors, unless they've lost the Senate seat and they decide to come back and try for governor.
We better move along here, because we have so many things to talk about in about 43 minutes or so. So let's go ahead and talk about the great Buckeye State. Now, as I've not been too shy about saying, I cast my vote for Cordray. I do think Mike DeWine has a long, distinguished career of service, but not sure I really trust the guy. He's getting a bit old, and although I do agree with him on some things, he's really rather conservative, and he hasn't really moderated like Kasich has. And not quite sure how well he'll get along with the people, how he'll be received by the people of Ohio, as well as how he'll do with the Ohio House and Senate, but I guess we'll find out. Bottom line is, Ron,
yeah,
I think...
Meanwhile, Sherrod Brown won big.
Yeah, I mean, Brown, again, and there is the irony. Brown is quite liberal, and often thought of as too liberal.
Why Cordray did not make it? Yeah. I don't
he
know
won
why
resoundingly,
he didn't make it.
But he's such a well-known name, but the same kind of thing happened with Metzenbaum, and he always seemed to win resoundingly, including against Voinovich, who was a fairly moderate Republican. So you really never know. That's why I say, get off your rear end and vote. As I say, you know, I'm going to complain about some of the results, but I voted, so I have a right to. And if you don't vote, well, you really don't have a right to. So that's why I brought that up, and may have said it too many times, but I do think it's important, as that's one of the things we enjoy as citizens of this great country called the U.S. of A. But bottom line is, I was surprised, Ron, by the victory of DeWine over our favorite Jeopardy champion, Mr. Cordray. It wasn't a resounding victory,
yes.
But you would agree with me that we both expected Cordray to be the winner?
I thought so, and I really thought that Gillum and also Nelson would win in Florida, because that now means six straight terms of a Republican governor. And the state is more red, as you say, than ever, and yet the country became much more blue, because three-fourths of the House of Representatives now is tilted to the left, meaning compared to the last election, even the Republicans who won or kept their seats had a smaller margin. So three-fourths of the House is more liberal, at least in the voting pattern, and of course there's Democrats in control now, and yet Florida and even Ohio became, although Ohio elected Brown, became more red. And that's not good for the Democrats, because Florida and Ohio are crucial states for the 2020 Electoral College. So it's like a mixed bag kind of a result.
So as I said, the 2020 presidential elections will certainly be intriguing, hard fought, and produce a lot of ad revenue for TV stations and other media. And I think I'll start getting sick of the commercials probably months before the election actually takes place, but that's all part.
Yeah, well, I want to point out that the last election, I think, was $2 billion, $1 billion for each side. They estimate, now I've read, it might be $4 billion spent in advertising, double what was in 2016. There's certainly going to be a lot of people making a lot of money, and of course there's going to be a lot of people, you know, in New Hampshire and also in Iowa and in South Carolina. And Nevada, yeah, those four states that are the early results, and they're going to have tons of people coming to report and cover it, so it's going to do a lot of good economic business for those four states.
So if you thought the campaign ads during this midterm election were annoying and excessive, you ain't seen nothing yet, my friends.
You're right.
Adam Lepp here, discussing politics, current events, presidential history, and other fun stuff with Dr. Ron Fineman on this rather wintry Monday, Veterans Day, here in the Buckeye State. As we talked about earlier, Veterans Day, which officially was yesterday, we celebrated the 100th anniversary of the ending of the Great War, World War I. About 18 million military and civilians passed away in that war, as well as 125,000 Americans, the second highest loss of life in America after the Civil War. And I'm quoting the blog
until
of Dr. Fineman,
the
ProgressiveProfessor.com, which we encourage you to read, bookmark. And again, if you don't agree with everything he says, that's fine. I don't agree with everything he says. So we talk about it. He loves to get your emails, and feel free to send me an email. As I say, we do have a private email server. Let me know what you think. Adam@WWGH1071.com. Dr. Fineman is also a regular contributor to HistoryNewsNetwork.org. And oftentimes his articles are about presidential trivia, things that he think may happen or may not happen. We'll discuss an article that he wrote for them, published yesterday, a little later in the show. What I do want to get to, Ron, is your blog post from Saturday, a massive blue wave despite a good economy, low unemployment, and actions to promote voter suppression. You know, one of my favorite presidents was the one who said he wasn't a crook, Richard Nixon, a.k.a. Tricky Dicky. The biggest blue wave since the 1974 midterms, after Richard Nixon resigned due to Watergate, has occurred. And now this week, but of course that would have been last week. It's also the greatest participation in a midterm election in 52 years since 1966, when there was a lot of anger at Lyndon Johnson's prosecution of the Vietnam War. The gender gap was the greatest we've seen. More young people voted than any time since the 26th Amendment gave 18-year-olds the right to vote. Would you be of the belief, Ron, that today's young adults, let's say people 18 to 29, are more to the left? And does that kind of go back and forth? When I was in college, they were more to the right. Does that kind
of
swing every generation?
Ronald
Reagan. Or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think in the 80s, it was because of the charisma of Ronald Reagan. They were more conservative, but I think they are more to the left now. And women, definitely the gender gap is massive now, the gender gap, particularly for college-educated women. And also the Midwest, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania swung over and now all have governors, you know, that are Democrats, which is important for reapportionment of seats after the census as far as the House of Representatives and the state legislatures. So the Democrats got a lot of victories, but Florida and Ohio are disappointments. That's the point to be made.
So always a surprise in the bunch. That's how politics tends to be. We'll go few states to the west. Kansas rejected the right-wing views of past Governor Sam Brownback and defeated Kris Kobach, a crooked candidate who worked to suppress voting rights all over the nation in the past few years. So I guess, Ron, you were pretty happy about that result.
Very happy about that result, yes. And also David Bratt in the 5th Congressional District in Virginia, who defeated Eric Cantor, who was the House Majority Leader in 2014, also lost his seat. And, you know, he's a professor of economics, or had been, but I just find whenever I've seen him, I get so furious at his Tea Party activism, because that's what he was, a Tea Party person. So also in California, we had a lot of Republican House members lose their seats. Now it's much more blue. I think it's only like 6 or 7 seats left in California out of their 53 that now are Republican, and in other states as well. There was a big switch, a lot of Republicans losing their seats, and about 35 to 40 seat gain in the House. So that was very impressive, and it's a good sign. But again, Florida and Ohio are like outliers in this. It's just weird how it worked out, particularly Florida.
Going just a little further west, we go to the Rocky Mountain state of Colorado. They have elected the first openly gay governor, Jared Polis. What are your thoughts about that,
correct,
Ron?
Well, I think that's a good thing. I mean, you know, the fact is we have Tammy Baldwin in the Senate from Wisconsin is lesbian. It's good to see that. Plus, we have Native Americans, we have Latinos, we have more African American and women. I'm talking particularly with women. I think over 100 women were elected. There's going to be it's not going to be such a male dominance in Congress now in the House of Representatives. And that's good. You know, it really is good. And also in the Senate, Arizona looks like it's going to go to the Democrats. It's not final, but she's quite a bit ahead. And Nevada went Jackie Rosen, a nice Jewish girl with a name like that. She is Jewish, won the seat in Nevada from Dean Heller. So there was some good results. But on the other hand, Missouri, Claire McCaskill is now retired, and that's a shame. And Heidi Heitkamp in Missouri, and Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, and Joe Donnelly in Indiana. But there's still a chance that Florida could be won. And in fact, Mississippi is open. There's a slight chance that the black nominee in Mississippi, Mike Espy, who was agriculture secretary under Bill Clinton, could win. So actually, if it's not going to probably happen, but if Florida was won by Nelson, and if Mississippi was won by Espy, and Arizona looks like it's going Democratic, it would actually mean no gain of seats. Now, that's a long shot, but right now it looks like a two-seat gain for the Republicans, but it could end up with no seat gain at all, just switched people.
Certainly will give us lots of things to talk about, as we like the idea that
some unsettled races.
The demographics of our government people reflects, to an extent, demographics of our great country. And we certainly saw some of that in the last election, with, I'm sure, a lot more to come. So another big news story, one of many from last week, was, of course, the departure of Jeff Sessions. Essentially, he was forced to resign by his boss, President Donald J. Trump. Now, we do make fun of Jeff Sessions, and again, he may not be the best attorney general ever, but as we've also talked about and agreed, he has a very hard job. Being attorney general is not an easy job. It's very rewarding and certainly can be fun and very stressful. But I would think working for Donald Trump in any capacity is not exactly a walk in the park. So you do respect that he did what he could, but again, do we necessarily agree with him or find him to be overly qualified? That's another question. What are your thoughts, Ron? Are you kind of like me? Where you feel a little bit sorry for Sessions, knowing that, again, he's not the most intelligent or the most qualified attorney general ever, but he had a hard job working for Donald? Or what were your thoughts when you first heard about his getting the pink slip?
Well, I wouldn't say I feel sorry for him, but I think his recusal from the Russian collusion was essential and necessary. But because of that, he suffered because what Trump wants is an attorney general who does his bidding. And that's not the job of the attorney general. It's to do the job of justice. And he's not supposed to be in the camp of the president of the United States, and never has been in other administrations, despite the fact that it would be argued by Trump that some of them were, but not the way he sees it, no. And now this Matthew Whitaker has been appointed acting attorney general and has already made clear his feeling that the Russian collusion case should be dropped. And basically, it sounds like he wants to fire Robert Mueller just at a time when we gather from different sources that he's about to indict Donald Trump Jr., Mueller. So it's going to be a very interesting couple of months to see what the Republicans do, because they're still in charge, and then to see what the Democrats do when they come to power on January 3rd. But it's a mess. And Sessions was courageous in sticking it out, but honestly, his record on immigration, his record on marijuana and other things is disgraceful. So I don't feel bad that he left. I just wish we'd had a better attorney general and that we had someone who was able to stay on and defy Trump. But Trump can still fire his cabinet member. You can't stop him from that.
There seems to be a lot of turnover in the administration. Wouldn't that be
more than any administration?
Right. That's an indication of instability and the fact that Trump made these choices. You take the good with the bad. You're not going to agree with all your choices. And I'm sure Trump and Pence don't agree on everything either, but he can't fire Pence. That's, as we've talked about, that's a big difference. You can't fire your running mate, your VP.
I want to know what Pence is saying privately. What is he saying to his wife and others? Does he really say everything is fine, or does he dislike the way? I have to believe he dislikes, but he keeps his mouth shut.
Probably things he wouldn't want to say in front of polite company. Let's put it that way. But you yes. With me, Ron, in that you would put a lot of you would judge a president quite heavily on his choice of of cabinet members and staff members. And if these people quit or get fired, that reflects on the president. That shows instability and poor decision making. Someone who's the commander in chief of the military, considered the most powerful person in the free world, should make a good decision. Yeah. And just like in a marriage, yes, some marriages don't work out. There inevitably will be firings and resignations. We're not saying there won't be one or two or three, but not half your, what seems to be half your staff. That does not reflect well on the president.
Well, yours has corrupt cabinet, very corrupt. A lot of them have been involved in conflicts of interest, so, and some have been forced out already. So it's really the worst cabinet in history, far worse than Richard Nixon, who actually had some pretty good cabinet members.
And we're left kind of with Mattis, whom we both like, but who knows what's going to happen. So we'll find
out. Mattis, I think, is privately furious. And, of course, even Trump calls him a Democrat. Apparently he's registered Democratic. So I don't know how long Mattis is going to last. But if he leaves, then I think we're in much more danger of looseness in military policy. Because it seems like Mattis ignores some of the things that Trump says, and Trump seems not to be aware of it. So he's still important to keep there.
And we'll just leave it at that. You wrote in your blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, last Thursday, Matthew Whitaker becoming acting attorney general creates a constitutional crisis over Robert Mueller investigation. Decision of President Trump to fire Attorney General Sessions and temporarily replace him with Matthew Whitaker, who has stated clearly his belief in 2017 that there should not be a continuation of the Mueller investigation. So is that a conflict of interest? Or am I reading too much into this?
I think it is. As I wrote, it's an alarm bell in the night. This is something that is trying to stop the investigation, and I'm sure there's a lot that's going to come out soon. I think it's going to be very soon. I still think it might happen this week before Thanksgiving. Every hint. It's also coming up to the 18-month anniversary of the investigation, actually. Now, you know, it started when indeed Comey was fired on the 9th, and we passed the 9th, and then, you know, of course, Mueller was appointed by Rod Rosenstein, who now apparently loses his control over this investigation, on the 17th. So here we're coming up to the 17th. You know, today is the 12th. I would not be surprised if by this weekend we have a bombshell about Donald Trump Jr., Roger Stone, and other people that have been rumored about to be indicted. And maybe that's why Trump is acting crazy, as he indeed banned Jim Acosta of CNN from White House press conferences, which I think should not be allowed, that a president cannot be allowed to do that, plus insulting black women journalists at that press conference. He was really unhinged more than ever this past Wednesday at his press conference.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Acosta. Obviously, Donald Trump thinks he can, I'm not quite sure the best way to say it, but pretty much dictate what happens with the press. And he is allowed, as actually when Sam Donaldson was on with Scott last week, hopefully had a chance to catch that wonderful interview, he talked about how the president has a right to revoke someone's press credentials. But as I see it, what makes our country great is the freedom of the press. And although he can do it, it really isn't very cool, and that's kind of my thought. Do we maybe need a change in the law, some kind of a provision, Ron, that the president doesn't have that much power to remove press credentials? And by removing press credentials, we're interfering with the freedom of the press that's so important in this country.
Well, a lawsuit apparently being considered by CNN on the issue of freedom of the press, the First Amendment. So it might go to the courts, and who knows? But, of course, meanwhile, he's banning Jim Acosta, who's a very courageous, gutsy journalist. And he's meanwhile insulting particularly women and black women journalists like April Ryan, who was on one of the shows on Sunday talking about how, and also not only that, but he's also insulting people like Maxine Waters, the president. And now Maxine Waters will be able to do an investigation of him. She's going to head a committee that can investigate his tax returns and other things. So it's going to be very interesting fireworks between Maxine Waters, who hit 80 years of age, who he calls a low IQ person in the 60s. And some people think maybe it's Trump that has his IQ in the 60s. Maxine Waters is no wallflower. She's going to be really aggressive, and she's going to get a lot of attention now as a committee chair.
Sounds like more fodder for the news, for people talking about stuff on talk shows and lots of those Facebook memes. You mentioned Ron wrote an article for historynewsnetwork.org, this being about Congress people becoming our next president. When one looks at the history of presidential elections, one discovers that only one congressman has ever gone from the House to the Oval Office, and that was James A. Garfield from nearby Cleveland, Ohio. So others have tried, Ron, and they have not been successful. What are your thoughts on that? Kind of sum up the article for our listeners.
Well, there are seven potential candidates that have shown interest or rumored about. I don't know how many of them were actually announced and how far they would get. Probably the odds are against any of them actually being the winner, but on the list would certainly be Joe Kennedy III, Robert Kennedy's grandson from Massachusetts, and also California Congressman Eric Swalwell, who has been very much in the news on the Investigations Committee and has a lot of press time and is pretty much hinted he's planning to run. Joe Kennedy III, not necessarily running, but you never know. But they're both going to be 40 in 2020. They're only 38 now. Imagine that. This month they both turned 38. So they are seen as very likely. And then, of course, we have Joaquin Castro of Texas, whose identical twin brother, Julian Castro, was housing secretary under Obama. And he's from San Antonio, and he's thought to be a possible candidate as well. And he'd only be 46 at the time of the election. And then there is a not well-known congressman, John Delaney of Maryland, who will be 57, who's actually announced his candidacy. He did not run for the House this time. He might not get much attention. He's announced, but nobody pays attention to him. But he apparently will at least be in some of the debates if he stays in the race, John Delaney of Maryland. And then there's Seth Moulton of Massachusetts, who would be 42, who's also seen as a likely person to announce. And also one woman, Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii, might very well run. And now we have to add Texas Congressman Robert Francis Beto O'Rourke. And I had not been aware until recently what Beto's real name was. Robert Francis O'Rourke is, I have a feeling, I don't know, but might have been named after Robert Francis Kennedy, who died 4 years before he was born, because O'Rourke was born in 1972. But interesting, he has the same name, but he has the nickname Beto, and he ran a very close race against Ted Cruz, lost by about 2,000 votes, but in the state of Texas, that's only about 2% loss. And the point is, he has a real following among young people. He's had people get very excited about him, like Robert Kennedy 50 years ago. So some people think he might, having lost the race and having no, quote, job, end quote, might actually announce for president in the coming months. And he'd only be 48 at the time of the election. So I think he might be someone to watch. But as far as who would be likely to be the actual nominee, most likely a governor or a senator. That's usually where it comes from.
So we may produce another president from the ranks of our House, but you're thinking maybe not this time, but who knows?
Yeah, I wanted to mention an interesting concept, which is quite humorous, is let's imagine Beto O'Rourke becomes the nominee for president, he'd be 48, and Joe Kennedy III becomes the running mate, vice president, age 40, so we would have one who looks just like Robert Kennedy, although he's not a Kennedy, he does look a lot like Robert Kennedy, and then Robert Kennedy's grandson, who looks more like Ted Kennedy, or maybe a mix with John F. Kennedy. That would really be quite funny to have two people related, at least by appearance or by blood, to the Kennedy family.
Would be interesting, especially after you've had a few beverages. Might not know which one you're looking at.
Yes.
Kind of like the identical twins, which we've talked about in the past also.
Yes. So, yeah, but it's funny that Robert Kennedy's grandson doesn't look like his grandfather. He looks like his uncles, his granduncles. But really, a lot of people have said, and I've seen it, he really does, Beto O'Rourke, look quite a bit like a Kennedy, but he's not. But he's named Robert Francis, just like Robert Francis Kennedy, which is really quite amazing when you think about it.
Definitely say that is intriguing, but that's why we always have so much fun on this show. A fine mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. According to an article yesterday, Ron, in CNN.com, of course, Donald thinks that's fake news, but honestly, I think CNN is one of the most reliable news sources. And you know,
yes.
They're generally in the middle. They at times are to the left, but I really see them as being middle of the road and kind of
Independent
and a lot like myself. That's probably why I like their commentators like Wolf Blitzer and their other people, and why I like to read their website and other stuff. Anyway, it writes almost every subgroup of women in CNN's national exit polls move toward the Democratic Party, including white, Latina, white, college-educated women, white, non-college-educated women, Democratic women, and independent women. The only groups that are inconclusive or stayed the same were African-American women and Republican women. And we mentioned that earlier, but we're really seeing more division. Demographics, almost a way to predict someone's political party. And what it's pretty much saying, days before the election, 62% of women likely voters nationally said in a poll conducted by SSRS that they'd support the Democratic candidate, compared to only 48% of men who said the same. Exit polls were similar, 59% of women and 47% of men. Now, could this also be related to Donald Trump and the fact that people think he's a misogynist, a sexist?
Absolutely.
And quite possibly...
He's destroying the, you know, the interest of women in voting Republican, and also suburbia, whether it's suburban women or suburban men. Suburbs were always Republican, while the cities, urban areas were Democrat. Now, this time, most of suburbia, not everybody, you know, meaning a majority, and also urban are Democratic. Only the rural areas or exurbia areas seem to remain Republican. So you could say, as they say on a map, there's a lot of red, but it's territory, it's not people as much. That's the difference, you know, and that's why they should come up with a map that goes by population as far as how they are, not by land area, because a lot of areas are not very populated in the middle of the country.
So we are seeing further divisiveness during the Trump administration. To me, a person's party, Ron, shouldn't be related so much to the person's demographic. And it's like we're saying, okay, you're a female, 60% chance that you're going to be a Democrat. And it really makes me worry a bit that it seems, okay, well, 6 out of 10 women being Democrat, that would imply that the Republican Party is anti-female, which is very uncool.
Well, that's the image they're getting, because a lot of the men in the party seem not to care about what Trump does. They never criticize him on anything, including misogyny. So they're harming themselves in the future, just as by not willingness to accept minority groups, Latinos, Asian Americans, and African Americans, the white population is declining as percentage, and it's not going to work that you can just be a white party. You have to have diversity in every respect.
And during previous Republican administrations, recent ones, both Bush's, Reagan, did we really see that? I don't recall this ever really being discussed before. I mean, race certainly comes up, but female versus male, I hardly ever heard anything about. 60% of women identified as Democrats or would vote for the Democratic candidate. So really,
they never did. And also immigration. All the others were pro-immigration, about having some kind of immigration reform. Reagan and the two Bushes. Bush too did not get it done, but he was calling for it, just as John McCain was. But now the party has an image of being nativist, and that's not good in the long run.
So that is a bit troubling. And again, Republicans being the party of Abraham Lincoln. And as we've talked about, Lincoln is turning over in his grave right now and wondering what's going on. But maybe we can fix this. In this CNN
article...
Not going
to be easy. Not in the age of Trump. It has to be after Trump. Maybe it can be fixed.
In the CNN article, it says in an exit poll in Texas this year, so recently from last week, 60% of white women voted for Republican incumbent Ted Cruz, 21 percentage points higher than those who voted for Democratic challenger Beto O'Rourke. Now, it's still a big, big margin for the Republicans, but in 2014, it was a 44-point margin versus less than half that, 21 points in 2018. So the gap is certainly closing, and who knows what might happen. But as we've discussed before, Ron, can this gap be closed? And are you like me in that you'd like it to be closed? I'd like to see half and half from male versus female. It worries me that, okay, if I vote for a Republican candidate, someone's going to think that I'm sexist, and I'm not the most unsexist person you're ever likely to meet. But is that possibly an issue? Are men like myself who are very non-sexist, thinking, well, if I vote for a Republican, people are going to think that I'm sexist. Is that going to be a problem, and maybe a problem for future Republican candidates?
I think it very well might be, and I think even now young people or people of any age who are dating and go to websites, you tend to find that women, you know, that are, let's say, Democrats or liberals are not going to date men who are Republican or conservative, and I'm sure there are going to be some more divorces or breakups. But also, it's an issue that a woman, I think, you know, feels they want a man to, you know, to sort of like see their side of the story, and if that many Republican men are going to be misogynist in their reputation, that's, you know, it's not going to be good for the relationship between the, you know, between the two genders.
Yeah, I do see that as being troubling. And people saying, and including this thing we talk about on Facebook, and sometimes we joke about, well, if you voted for this candidate, if you're against this, if you're for this, go ahead and remove me from your friends list. And that's
yes.
Just, I mean, it's just middle-aged people acting like 7-year-old kids. And I think we're above that, but we're seeing a lot of that. And it really is very troubling. As I said, we're all on the same side. We're all Americans, but the divisiveness that we're currently experiencing, and I think it's increased after this election, is quite troubling. So take a deep breath, folks. Realize we're all on the same team. We don't always agree. At least try to shake hands and try to get along. It really does work wonders. So we thank Dr. Ron Feinman once again for joining us on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Before we adjourn after today's program, Ron, any parting comments?
Well, I wanted to point out my entry of November 9th about the ultimate outcome of the midterm election was the social welfare, social justice state is permanent, meaning now Mitch McConnell has said the idea of dropping Obamacare, improve it, but the idea of getting rid of Obamacare is over. That's what he said right after the election. And, of course, Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security had their fights over the years, but they're now establishment. So it means that what I call the social welfare, social justice state, the whole concept of the social safety net has been preserved by the way things have worked out, that we're not going to get rid of Social Security. We'll have a reform of it, maybe, and Medicare and Medicaid, and certainly for Obamacare, but not just wipe it out without an alternative. And I think that's a victory, that at least there will be, you know, with changes, this social welfare, social justice state that will survive.
So the plot continues to thicken, leaving us more fodder for future shows. Thanks again, Dr.
Oh, for sure. And imagine the next 2 years on the election. Oh, my gosh, we'll never run out of things to talk about.
I seriously doubt we'll ever sit here in the middle of the show and say, what do we talk about next? We have yet to do that.
Yes.
In fact, normally it's a case of, well, the clock is ticking. I better talk faster. Well, thank you again, Dr. Ron Feinman, for joining us today on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. I had a great time. Thanks so much.